FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with the Flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
The Phil Nason Show, is on. In five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour talking basketball and a little baseball. Later on, we'll talk Oklahoma City Thunder hoops. Jeremy Lamb's on the hot seat. They're in big trouble. They just don't want to admit it, and that's fair enough. And we'll also run a replay of an interview I did with Let's Go Tribe. We'll talk about the American League Cy Young Award winner we think should be Corey Kluber. But up first, it's time to make our previews of the conferences and the divisions where our guys, teams, compete in. And joining me to talk about the Southeast and the Miami Heat, please welcome from HotHotHoops.com, David Ramil is in the house. David, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, man, lucky to be here. Very happy to be talking Heat basketball with you and looking forward to the start of the season in just a few days.
Yeah, it's 1 week away, and that's a good thing, man. I got to tell you, there's all kinds of things jumping off. And we'll get into that when we do a really good Miami Heat preview before the season starts. But you pointed out something to me while I was in the studio I did not know, and that's the results from the GM poll was out. It's over at NBAA.com. And they have, and this is, we'll talk about the Southeast today because that was our plan all along. This is what they have. They have Washington winning that division. 59.3% of GMs think that they'll win. 29.6% think Miami will win, 7.4% for Atlanta, and 3.7% for Charlotte. And it looks like Orlando didn't even get a mention. Now, you're a Miami Heat guy. Where do you see Miami figuring into this division?
I actually think that they'll have a chance to repeat as division champs. I think that they're, you know, pretty solid all around. Their depth is being taken for granted at this point, but for somebody like me who follows the team as closely as I do, I think they have a lot of potential next season. I know people are discounting them because of the loss of LeBron James, but, you know, you take into consideration, and this applies to every team, you know, you've got to factor in potential injuries, but Washington's already dealing with that. Bradley Beal is lost for a good chunk of time. That might set them back far enough so that they might not be able to reclaim that lead in the Southeast Division. So, you know, I think Miami has a chance to take it all the way. And I think Atlanta, you know, as they try to integrate other pieces like Al Horford, et cetera, will he be there full strength throughout the whole season? There's just too many question marks for all those other teams. And Miami, as you and I have talked about, they've got that experience. You can't take that for granted. And I think they know how to close out games. Even without LeBron James still on the roster, I think there's enough players there that can actually make it happen that are comfortable in the system and that even though they've shown some weakness over the preseason, they're going to continue to get stronger as the season rolls by. And they have the belief that they can advance in the postseason. They're not just looking to make the playoffs. They're looking to make it all the way back to the finals. Whether that's realistic or not, who cares? The point is they have that belief. And as long as they can make that vision a reality, I think they have a chance to make some noise. And that starts with taking over the Southeast Division.
Yeah, you know, I've come to this conclusion that winning divisions don't mean diddly anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
And I have this other conclusion that I've reached, and people can disagree all they like. But I think veteran teams like Miami and, well, even San Antonio, they've proven this over the years, they don't give a hoot about where they finish as long as they make the playoffs healthy. And I think that's where this is where I see Miami kind of jumping in there too, because you've got Dwayne Wade. You know, you don't know what to expect from him. You've got Josh McRoberts. Okay, he was injured a little bit, but and he's had some history there. But the thing is with him is he's only really had a half a good season in the NBA since he's been in the NBA.
Yeah.
And I think they're counting on that a lot more than maybe they should. And here's the other thing too. I think that perhaps Miami is going to miss LeBron James more than they want to admit. What do you think about that?
Oh, a lot to think about. As far as Wade is concerned, I think, you know, we've come to dismiss from Wade, because we've seen him struggle over the last few years with injuries and stuff like that. But I think he's savvy enough and self-aware enough, which is something that LeBron James lacks, that he knows that he has to do only as much as he needs to in order for this team to win. And I think he wasn't able to during the finals last year, but he took for granted that LeBron wouldn't be, you know, thrown off by the whole maintenance program when he sat out 28 games last year. And so I think Wade is still very competitive, and he knows that he needs to play at a high level. Even throughout this preseason, we've seen him miss some games where he wasn't playing at 100%. And then last night on national television against, you know, a quote-unquote rival in James Harden, who he still has a little bit of beef with from last season, he turns it up and he just goes crazy. He knocks down his first four or five shots, and he was just as athletic as you could expect, and they pull out a win. And this is the kind of guy that we've seen from Dwayne Wade, you know, early in his career. He's done talking about the injuries, and I think he just wants to be able to finish up his career strong, and this is his opportunity to do that. Well, he plays out the next 2 years of his contract. I think he wants to end on a high note. So I expect him to actually be a very solid contributor. While the production might not be as great as, say, an MVP-type candidate like LeBron James or Durant, he's still going to give you 20 points a night, and he's going to be a consistent player. I don't think they're going to miss LeBron as much. I mean, what are you going to say? They lost the best player on the planet. They can't harp on that all season long as much as the media and fans are going to want to bring it up throughout the course of the year. But, you know, they've got to move on, and they're doing the best thing possible. And it's funny that you tie in Josh McRoberts there, because I think he's actually part of the solution to it. And the reason why is because he has so much versatility. The way he initiates the offense from the high post, his passing ability is top notch. He's a pretty solid rebounder. He's a good outside shooter. And so when I look at the team and how they come to grips with the loss of LeBron, it's going to be an effort, you know, a team-wide effort. And that starts with getting, you know, Luol Deng to play that perimeter defense that we expected from LeBron over the last few years. It starts with, you know, Chris Bosh being a more active scorer the way LeBron took over the scoring load when he was here in Miami. And then with McRoberts, once he's fully integrated into the team, getting that passing from him, being able to initiate the offense, as I mentioned. And those are the kinds of things that LeBron was able to do over the last 4 years. And now it's kind of, you know, an effort, a team-wide effort in order to get it going.
Yeah, those are all good observations, good points, too. I'm one of those guys that looks for consistency with these fellas. I think it's the fantasy basketball player in me, probably. But I want to see Josh McRoberts do it for more than a half a season before I become a believer. But yeah. You know what I mean. And the thing is, too, is they will miss LeBron. Of course they're going to. How much right. So remains to be seen because of the injuries, because of the health. The other question, though, that I have with Miami, though, honestly speaking, is Chris Bosh. How is he going to reclaim that number one spot that he used to be, the number one option? How is he going to respond to that over 82 games?
I mean, I expect him to meet the challenge. I think, you know, he's just become so much more versatile a player since he was in Toronto. And so I think it's the combination of the former Toronto Raptors version of Bosh and the player he's become now. And we've seen that over the first, you know, six games of the preseason, or six or seven at this point. I can't really remember. But the point is that, he's been very good at mixing up that outside shot that he's able to knock down much more consistently now than he did in Toronto. And he's still working in the low post, and he's using his speed to get by players that are, you know, bigger and slower. Since he starts at the center position, which is tough because he's somewhat undersized, obviously, the advantage on the offensive end is that he's much quicker. So he's able to get past even a great athlete like Dwight Howard last night's game. Bosh blew by him on a number of occasions. And, you know, that's just the way the league has changed. It's no longer the 80s and 90s when you had a big man in the pivot. Now you've got a stretch player. You know, you've got guys like Nowitzki who is our stretch four. And even in Atlanta, where you have Paro Antić, who can, you know, spot up outside at the three-point line. That's just the way the game has changed now. So I don't think it's going to be as much of a disadvantage. And I see him being able to, you know, be cerebral about this approach. He's highly intelligent. He's very self-aware. Again, a really big plus. And I think he understands the challenge, and he's ready to meet it. He said all the right things. I really expect him to have a very, very good year.
Sounds good. We'll have to wait and see. Washington, though, I have them figuring in here about second place, and there's a caveat there.
Yeah, sure.
Health is the biggest issue there. You know, you've got Nene, who's has some injury issues. Gortat has some injury issues. Bradley Beal has never played an entire season either. Where do you see Washington fitting into all this? Because a lot of these GMs, they've got Washington winning by, a large margin of GMs think it's going to be Washington winning the Southeast.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. They're a really solid team. I mean, really deep. They've got a lot of talent across the board. You know, arguably one of the best backcourts in the NBA with John Wall and Bradley Beal there. Paul Pierce, he was brought in to replace the 3-and-D abilities of Trevor Ariza, and he's still a real solid competitor. I mean, he has outside range. He knows how to, score even at his advanced age. So I think he's still a real good player. They signed a couple of guys in the front court, Chris Humphries, DeJuan Blair. These are guys with solid rebounding experience throughout their careers. Yeah, Nene and Gortat, they're really good players. I mean, they have their limitations, but you put them all together, it's a real solid team. It's just, I guess we've just kind of, and maybe I'm speaking, from my own personal experience, I've kind of underestimated Washington for such a long time, even though they made the playoffs last year, that I don't expect them to make that, that leap to that next level team. This could be the year where they finally do it. Maybe Pierce and his, at the end of his career, he's able to inspire the younger guys to, really make a go of it. And you can't underestimate the fact that, that competitive spirit, his rivalry with LeBron James, maybe he'll be able to get Washington, advance through the Eastern Conference, maybe all the way up to the finals. I don't see them being, I just don't think they're as top-heavy talent-wise as Miami is. Beal's injuries are going to be a problem. John Wall, to me, is still a little too inconsistent, even though he's playing better and better. I don't know. It's tough to call. It's really a coin flip either way. I have them second in the division to Miami, but I think they're a really great team.
Yeah, they are. But again, those injuries, that makes me nervous. Now, Atlanta, though. Matt Moore was on the show last Thursday, and he likes Atlanta a lot. He thought that they could probably be a 3 or 4 seed. Again, the caveat being, can Al Horford stay healthy? Right. And that's the biggest issue. I have Atlanta actually winning the Southeast. Again, caveat, if they stay healthy. What do you think about Atlanta? We've got about 3 minutes to go, Dave.
Sorry, yeah, they're really deep. I think they're very dangerous. I think Paul Millsap is a huge threat. He's very dangerous. He's in a contract year. He does a lot. He's very undervalued, but he's always been a heat killer, and he's still very dangerous. That combination of that deep front court and then Kyle Korver's unlimited range can make them a real threat in the Southeast Division and in the Eastern Conference. I've got them third overall in the division. I think they'll be a fifth seed in the conference, but I think they're still a really good team.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. They're a very good team. They're a dangerous team because of their shooting ability.
Yeah.
And they're a tough basketball team. But again, it's a health issue for me. I have them winning the East or Southeast if they can be healthy. But, man, that's, again, the caveat. Charlotte, they've upgraded a bit too. But my opinion, Lance and Al aren't going to get it done.
Well, on paper, it seems like a good mix because I think Jefferson is that low post beast. I mean, his game is somewhat, anachronistic in that it's old school. But I think, he might clog up the paint a little bit. And that's part of Stevenson's game is that he does, drive to the hoop very effectively, even if he mixes that outside shot somewhat. So maybe there might be a conflict there. I think both of them are talented enough to make it work. The problem is, can Stevenson, kind of shed that knucklehead image that he's embraced over the last few years of his career in Indiana? I think he will. I think it's just a maturation process. And I think that he's going to turn it around in Charlotte. And they've got some really good pieces there. I think, Marvin Williams, he's probably a downgrade from Josh McRoberts just because I don't know how he'll play into that system that Steve Clifford implemented last year as a head coach. It's going to be tough to predict exactly how far they'll advance because you don't know if it's all going to mesh this year or if it might take some time to do so. But they've got some other good players. Kemba Walker's a really good guard. They've got Noah Vonleh, who's the rookie there, if he can get past his injury issues and be a contributor. I think they've got some good pieces in place there. And, Michael Gilchrist, he's worked on that jump shot. Everybody's talked about how nice it looks and he's going to be a scoring threat for the first time, able to balance out how strong he is defensively with an improved jump shot. the jury's still out, but I mean, he's looked solid in the preseason, and Charlotte fans are expecting a lot of things from him. So, you know, it's a very competitive division. I think you and I talked about it before, second in the Southwest Division. You've got four legitimate playoff contenders there, which I guess leaves us with the last team in the Southeast Division, the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, we're going to leave the Orlando Magic because we've run out of time. But, yeah, I share all your concerns about Charlotte. Lance. You know, we talked about him all last season with Tom Lewis from Indy Cornrows. Lance is Lance. Al is Al. And, unfortunately, Charlotte is Charlotte. And I underestimate them probably, too, a lot. Anyway, great stuff today, David. Thanks for being on the show with me.
You got it. Looking forward to next week.
You bet. That was David Ramilla. You can find him over at hothoops.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to the Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're Earl Forget, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
no.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with a flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtownSports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and the Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
Shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. As many of you know, I moved to Akron, Ohio from Corfu, Greece about 2 months ago. And one of my things that I wanted to do was have an all-Cleveland day. Well, we're two-thirds of the way there now that Jason Lukart from Let's Go Tribe is here. and he's on the line. Jason, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
I am too. I'm really happy to have you. I'm glad that we could make this work. Tell us a little bit about Let's Go Tribe and who you are and your writers. Go ahead and plug the site.
Sure. So Let's Go Tribe is the Cleveland Indian site that's part of SB Nation. And the site's been around for almost 10 years, which long predates my own involvement. I've been writing for the site for a little over 2 years. I've been the managing editor for about a year now. We've got a group of about 8 or 10 guys doing work, try to cover as much as we can, cover what's going on with the team, transactions, prospects, try to bring humorous things in when we can. And it's been a lot of fun to be a part of. It's been, in my, I'm sure, biased opinion, we do a better job of covering the Indians than any site like us.
And that's absolutely correct. That's why I contacted you. Not because you work with SB Nation, because I do a lot of stuff with SB Nation sites, but there's some SB Nation sites I don't. And I have other people because their sites are just better. I mean, the work is just better. But Let's Go Tribe is the number one Cleveland Indians website for a reason. You guys do a lot of good work. You've been my resource for the past 5 years whenever I needed Cleveland Indian stuff. So I'm really happy to have you here. One of the things, when I got back, one of the things people were asking me all the time is Corey Kluber. Say that thing 3 times real fast. But Cy Young candidate, is he a winner or is he going to lose out to King Felix? Or maybe someone else?
I tend to think he'll lose out to Felix. I think Hernandez, the name recognition factor is a big deal. I think people were considering him a candidate longer. And I think this is the sort of thing where sometimes people kind of make up their minds early and it's hard for their minds to be changed. And I don't think Felix would be a bad choice. I don't think either of them would be a bad choice. I do think Kluber was just a little better. And I can get into that if you'd like, but I tend to think Felix will come out ahead.
Oh, we're going to get into it because that's why we're here, to entertain the fans and to have a little fun. I have Corey Kluber as above Felix Hernandez. One of the reasons is because of the way he pitched down the stretch. Both teams were in the same boat fighting for a wild card. And Kluber went down the stretch, 8-3, something like that. He had back-to-back 14 strikeout games. His ERA was lower over the course of the season. While at the beginning of the season, his wins above replacements was a little bit lower. Now he has the highest wins above replacement of any American League player other than, I think, Mike Trout, right?
Yep, correct.
So, I don't know where I hate that name recognition thing too, Jason. I really hate that. Because it's not fair to a kid like Kluber, who this might be his best season ever, or it is, and he may never get there again. You never know with these guys, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, a season as good as his, even a great pitcher, is rarely going to have a season this good. And like you said, down the stretch, in the second half, he had a 1.73 ERA. He struck out something like 11 guys for every 9 innings. His second half was incredible. And, overall, Felix's ERA was a little lower. Part of that's Felix pitching his home games in a better pitcher's park. And when you look at the things that pitchers can control, I don't know if you're familiar with FIP, which is fielding independent pitching. But strikeouts, walks, home runs, Kluber's FIP was better. And the Indians, I hate to say it, but had a horrible, horrible defense this year. Worst defense in baseball. And some of that gets noted with unearned runs, and that's not in his ERA. But there's also plays that a better defense makes that the Indians were so bad they weren't even getting to them to make errors, and they just go in as doubles that for other teams would have been outs. And I think when you look at what a pitcher can really control, I think Kluber was the best pitcher.
Yep, he sure was, and I'm very familiar with FIP. We do a lot of fantasy sports. I write exclusive fantasy sports baseball stuff for a couple of sites. Yeah, exactly. And I was going to note, too, about the bad defense, because the Indians play atrocious defense. That's why they didn't win the division. If they would have played better defense, they probably would have won the division. And honestly, Corey Kluber had a better season. He is, in my opinion, the Cy Young Award winner for 2014.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong about who will win. You know, I think with 3 weeks left in the season, I didn't think there was any chance Kluber could win. And I at least think he's got a chance now. And we'll find out in 2 or 3 weeks, I guess.
Well, I'll see Terry Pluto on Monday, and I'll make sure I push this again on him. Because we need the baseball writers of America to take care of business and not play a popularity contest.
Yeah.
You know, and that's usually what some of them do. Some of them do. You know, not all of them, but some of them do. Pluto's one of those guys that doesn't do that. So, but honestly, he is the, you could probably even make a case if it's not him or Felix Hernandez. You know what they could do is just give it to John Lester. Lester had a pretty good year too.
Yeah, he did, both before and after the trade.
And that would suck because he didn't have as good a year as Corey Kluber did. It's going to be interesting, and if this happens and he doesn't win it, we're going to just come back on the air and just rip the crap out of these guys. That's what we'll do because they were just stupid. If you don't pick Corey Kluber as your Cy Young Award winner with all the information in front of you, then you either are A, biased, or B, stupid and shouldn't be covering sports. That's my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you mentioned the baseball writers who, of course, who vote on this. I do think they've gotten better about things in recent years in terms of looking at things for pitchers beyond just, you know, ERA and wins, for hitters looking at beyond just batting average and RBI. So I think as a group, they're getting better. Part of that is probably new members getting brought in. You've got sites like FanGraphs that are now being accepted into the Baseball Writers Association, and you know those guys starting to get votes. And some of it is probably guys who've been doing this for a long time, but who are open-minded and are learning new things about the game. So that gives me at least hope that Kluber might win. We'll see.
And if they doesn't win, we'll come back on here the next day and yeah. Rip the crap out of whoever voted
Sounds
against him.
Good.
I'm really serious about that too. All right, what, you know, I hate to bring this up. Let's just get this out of the way. What went wrong with the Indians this season? Why? Because they played so well down the stretch, just like they did the season before. What happened to the Cleveland Indians? Because a lot of people ask me that. What happened to this baseball team?
I think the biggest thing to identify a single thing for me was Jason Kipnis. I think he was the team's best player last year. And, you know, at his age, there was an expectation that he was still coming into his prime and might even get better. And instead, his numbers really fell off. And at one point, he suffered a strained oblique. And there was a lot of talk that he never really recovered from that. And that might be true. But even before the injury, his numbers were way down. And that made a big difference. You know, beyond him, Nick Swisher was okay in his first year with the team and had some big hits. He sort of fell off the table in 2014 and was... when he was on the field, which was less and less as the year went by, he was one of the, I hate to say it, but one of the worst players in baseball. And so that was a big disappointment. You know, Justin Masterson had a really bad season before he was traded. And the starting rotation was amazing after the All-Star break. But they were in shambles for the first 3.5 months. And Masterson was a big part of that. So I think those are, you know, in terms of picking out single players, the ones who jump out at me in terms of like more of a team-wide trend to the defense, as you already mentioned, you know, it really might have cost them, like you said, the division. I think they probably would have won 4 or 5 more games. And, you know, if a couple of those games are against Detroit or Kansas City, they pass both of them. It was hard to watch at times. It's really frustrating to be watching, you know, professional athletes who seem to struggle so mightily at what seems like a relatively you know, basic part of the game. Not that being a great defensive team is basic, but just to be a competent one. And they weren't competent this year.
No, they sure weren't. And that was probably what did it. That's, in my opinion, that is what did it. It's frustrating when you're playing ball to come from behind and have holes dug for you all the time. You know, it's really difficult. I think it's a wear and it's a tear. But they played really well down the stretch. So I guess let's flip the coin and what went right this season for the Indians? What can fans sit back now that the season is over when they're watching the Kansas City Royals, which is the craziest thing you've ever seen in the World Series? And God bless them. Congratulations. I think it's amazing. But what went right for the Indians besides Kluber, of course?
Well, I think, you know, in addition to Clue, I think the entire rotation by the end of the year, I think the last, you know, basically 2 months of the season, August, September, the starting rotation as a group did as well as it's done since, I don't know when, a long time, maybe since before I was paying attention. You know, so Kluber, of course, and we already talked about him, Carlos Carrasco, who I had sort of given up on as being a productive starter and was happy with him in the bullpen where he was doing well. And it felt sort of like a move made in desperation to put him back in the rotation. And he was just as good as Kluber for those last 2 months. You know, not quite as many innings, but he was fantastic. And he looks like maybe a legitimate number two. TJ House, who I didn't put much thought into him being a big part of the rotation, but he did really well, and it's nice to have a lefty. I think the rotation, you got Danny Salazar and Trevor Bauer too, who are pretty inconsistent but certainly have a ton of talent. I think Indians fans should be really excited about the state of the rotation, more so than they have been in at least, you know, 15-20 years. So I think that's the big positive from this year. On the position player side of things, Yan Gomes showed that 2013 wasn't a fluke. He's one of the best defensive catchers, and he's also a plus hitter, which is a big plus for a catcher. Michael Brantley, the step up he took was really exciting. He ought to land somewhere in the top five of the MVP voting. You know, Carlos Santana has a really low batting average, but led the majors in walks and led the team in home runs. There are a lot of really good players on the team, and just about all of them are under team control for at least another 3 years. So if they can bring in the right pieces to go with those guys, they should be a contender for the next few years.
Well, they absolutely should. Lonnie Chisenhall was another one I thought did pretty well. I kind of was trumping him up for as a sleeper in fantasy baseball in the spring. I said, Santana's not going to be able to play third base, and they're going to need somebody. And that's going to be your guy. And Chisenhall, I thought he did all right. Defensively is another issue. But that is what it is. But Brantley was a beast. And Yan Gomes, too. That's another guy. I drafted him in fantasy baseball. People looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, no, I'm telling you, this kid is good. Because if they're worried about where they're going to put Santana, that must mean something. Pay attention to these things. And I thought he did fantastic, especially at the plate. Once he got comfortable, and then he got that concussion, and think, you know, that when you get your bell rung like that, it's not so easy. What do you think they're going to eventually do with Yan Gomes? Move him out from behind the plate, because this is such a good, talented kid. You don't want to lose him to the concussion world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they'll keep him behind the plate, though. In part, his defense is really good, and you know, his bat's nice, but he loses a lot of his overall value if he's not catching. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get him, you know, a game a week at DH or something like that. They've got a guy named Roberto Perez, a young guy who also plays really strong defense, and I think will probably be one of the better backup catchers. So you can feel pretty comfortable having him, you know, start one, sometimes two games a week. So I think they can maybe, you know, try to minimize the wear and tear on Gomes a bit. But I think so much of his value is tied up in him being able to be behind the plate. I think for the next 2 or 3 years, they'll, as much as they can, just kind of, you know, let him do his thing back there and hope that, you know, he doesn't suffer another concussion.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, Brantley, he came out of really, he was a pretty good ball player. Now he's an all-star. That was kind of fun to watch. And Santana, yeah, his batting average will kill you. But leading, it's really weird. How can you have a low batting average and still lead the league in walks? I don't understand that. But he somehow figured it out and made it happen. Who was the biggest surprise for you on this team? Because we've got about 45 seconds, man.
For me, it was Brantley. You know, I've liked Brantley for the last 2 or 3 years. But what I've been saying, you know, is that there's a place for just an average solid player, pretty good defense, you know, pretty good hitting. And I was content with that. And for him to go from slightly above average to legitimate, you know, top five player in the league, for me, that was a big surprise. And it'll be really exciting to see if he can keep that up.
Absolutely. It'll be fun. And we'll be here to cover it all. Jason, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Phil.
All right. That was Jason Lukart. You can find him at letsgotribe.com. Coming up next, If you're a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, you're going to enjoy this next one. David Zavick will be here to talk Cleveland Cavaliers hoop. And you're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
though.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with a flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtownSports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of NBA and Cleveland Indians talk. And joining me to talk about Jeremy Lamb, because he seems to be the hot topic over at the Oklahoma City Thunder. Please welcome from WelcomeToLoudCity.com, J.A. Sherman is in the house. J.A., how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil. It's great to be here and to talk about the Thunder. And, we've been in for kind of a rocky past couple weeks. At first, we found out that rookie Mitch McGarry broke his foot. Then we found out that Kevin Durant broke his foot. And now we are hoping that the youngsters on the team, guys like Andre Roberson and Jeremy Lamb and Steven Adams, would be ready to step up. And so far, it seems like only Adams has been the one that surprised anybody. And Jeremy Lamb has been one of the questionable disappointments over the past 6 months or so. So, yeah, we're a little bit worried about him.
This is why I get on Scott Brooks. People don't realize it, but Scott Brooks killed that kid's confidence. I mean, this all started when Caron Butler showed up. And it was okay. The trade was fine. But taking Lamb out of that rotation and putting him in Scott Brooks' purgatory is what hammered that kid's confidence. And he's got no confidence left. But the great thing about it is still he's leading the team in scoring. He's second in rebounding and third in assists. And he's getting the job done. He's playing 32 minutes a game. He's just not doing what everybody thought he should do. And that's hit a lot of threes. And, you know, as a shooter, you can't just turn it on and off, can you?
Yeah, it's been a challenge for Lamb. And it shows that how difficult it is for young players to come into a system that is championship ready and contribute. It takes a lot of mental fortitude in order to be able to step into that kind of environment. And the two players that I think of in comparison would be Mario Chalmers in Miami, who seems to have so much confidence that LeBron James wants to fight him on the sidelines. He gets so mad at him sometimes. And Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio, where I think there's a better model to use in his career. Because when he came in, Greg Popovich essentially asked him to do two things well. He asked him to play great defense and to finish and take a few three-pointers. And over the first two seasons of his career, that's all he really had to do was play great defense, rebound a little bit, just be a team player. And by taking it that slowly and deliberately, it enabled Kawhi Leonard to take steps beyond where we thought he would be now as he's approaching his first contract extension. And what do you know? He was the finals MVP, outplaying three quarters of the entire Heat offense. And I think that's a great way to look at how you develop a young player who might have some serious talent, but may not have the mental readiness to be able to perform. And that's what we've seen with Lamb. As you mentioned, his season last year was really cut short when Caron Butler came into play. And Lamb was kind of just pushed to the wayside. He didn't have any impact in the playoffs at all. And then over the summertime, the word was he was going to be the guy that was ready to step up and move forward and take over both three-point shooting duties in the Thunder offense, as well as be a major offensive contributor in the second unit. And what we saw in the summer league in Orlando was that he became too much of a volume shooter. It was like the coaches said to him, "We need you to be offensive minded," and he just kind of took it to an extreme, and he sort of got that Rudy Gay kind of mentality where he was just looking for shots too much, instead of playing the way he played last year in January, where. Like Kawhi Leonard, he was simply asked to be a good spot-up shooter and then run pick-and-roll offense with guys like Nick Collison. And so now we're five games into the preseason or so, and he's not improving his shooting. He's rebounding well. He's handling the ball well. He's doing the little things. But for his core competency, which is three-point shooting, he's just not there, and it's got a lot of Thunder fans worried.
Well, yeah, but then again, you got to look at that coach.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with him and his crazy rotations and his I don't know what he asked these players to do, because they don't do what they should be doing, and that's win in playoff games, which is this is a good team.
Yeah.
A really good team. You've got on this Oklahoma City Thunder team, Jay, you've got three of Sports Illustrated's top 20 players in the NBA. Three of them. And yet you barely beat the Grizzlies. I mean, the Grizzlies are a pretty good team, though, but still in all, it's got to be disheartening. Now, what do you do? What do you do? If you're Scott Brooks, well, unfortunately, you're smarter than he is, but if you're Scott Brooks, what do you do?
I think I would take the approach that this team is better off than they were last year, but they're not better right now. And I mean that last year they had veterans in Derek Fisher and then Caron Butler and Thabo Sefolosha, who had been through a lot of battles with Durant and Westbrook and Ibaka. And so they were proven commodities, but with very limited upside. And what the team had to ask from them in the playoffs when Durant was struggling, when the offense wasn't clicking, and then when Ibaka got hurt, were things that those guys simply couldn't do. You can't ask Derek Fisher to go above and beyond being a three-point shooter who takes 3 to 4 shots a game. You can't do that because he doesn't have the ability to do that. And so by eliminating a lot of that that veteran talent that was had very limited upside and replacing it with much younger, much more inexperienced youngsters, but with a lot higher upside, you have to be willing to take a step backwards now. And they certainly will because Durant is injured. But you have to say we're playing for April and May. And so in order to be a good team in April and May, and that means not only a good starting five, but a good 10-man rotation with guys like Lamb contributing, Robertson contributing, and hopefully McGarry contributing, you have to be willing to ride out all the bumpy stuff now. And now is a great time to do it because, you know, let's face it, nobody plays defense at the beginning of the season. So let them get their feet wet. Let them make mistakes the way we thought that what we were watching last year, with especially with Lamb and Reggie Jackson. It seemed like Brooks was ready to go all in with those guys and just let them work out their games. And then it got cut short. I really hope that the lessons learned from that experience were that you can trust young guys to step up and they will follow and they will follow the leaders, but you can't pull them before you're ready because those are the guys that are going to determine whether or not the Thunder make it back to the finals.
Well, that's exactly right. And the problem is he doesn't trust those guys and they lose confidence in that and then they don't trust themselves.
Yep.
As a coach, you can't do that. I've been a coach for 30 years. I can tell you it doesn't work that way. You destroy somebody's confidence, it's over. And I'm sure Jeremy Lamb probably wishes he was anywhere else but the Oklahoma City Thunder. He probably doesn't want to play for him. He has no choice. But Steven Adams has been a bright spot. But how much can he contribute? I mean, you're looking at another guy who, well, let's be honest, he gets in a lot of issues with fouls.
Yeah, he does. And that hasn't changed too much in the preseason, although you're going to get a little bit of suspect referee calling at that point. I think that Adams is vastly improved over a year ago, and he proved that by shooting a very high percentage in the preseason so far. Those percentages will eventually normalize, but the ability that he's shown in finishing at the rim, setting up pick and rolls, catching on the move, and then finishing with jump hooks, with layups, with dunks, all that, it shows that his upside as compared to Kendrick Perkins is it's not even in the same book. But he still has a lot to learn in terms of just staying on the court. You know, what is he going to do when he has to deal with a Tim Duncan for 30 minutes a night? What's he going to do when he's got to try and stop LaMarcus Aldridge? I mean, those guys are going to test him, and they're going to test him in ways they're going to challenge him not to foul. So that's the area of growth that he needs to show. But as far as everything else, he's stronger, he's faster, he's moving better, he's shooting better. His free throws are still a little suspect. But just like Lamb, the key is for Brooks is don't ask Adams to do something that he can't do. Don't put him in a spot-up game. He's not going to be able to do those things. Don't put him outside of the arc where he's useless. Keep him at the rim. Keep him in pick-and-roll game where he can finish. And just let him rebound and out-muscle guys, and we'll be fine, and we'll have a great time watching him.
Absolutely. He's a lot of fun to watch, and he has improved that. I like what he's done so far. He's only played basketball, what, 3 or 4 years in his life?
Yeah.
Give him a break. But still, he's thrust in a very difficult role. The ones who are going to have to carry this club are going to be Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka, because I've lost – I don't know what's going on with Reggie Jackson, really. Ever since he shot his mouth off, he's kind of, you know, regressed also, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, he got a DNP his last preseason game, and, yeah, that's probably by design, to give other guys a chance, although I have no idea why the Thunder are playing guys that will not make any roster this season. I would have thought that it would be at least useful to play Jackson, you know, 15 minutes or something like that, and put him in situations where he'll be playing alongside the guys that he'll be playing with in the regular season. But that's just how I look at it. perhaps the Thunder are strictly in preservation mode. Let's just get through the preseason without any more injuries and keep everybody healthy. And then we'll see where we are in day one. But people are nervous because what we saw in the last couple of games is really, really shaky offense and no defense at all. And the guy that's going to be tested is Russell Westbrook. And it's going to be exciting to see what he does. And I think that his naysayers are thinking he's going to turn into a 40-shot-a-game kind of player. And he's just going to go wild. Well, those are the people that don't actually watch him play. And so I'm here, and Welcome to Loud City is here to tell you that if you actually watch him play, you realize that he's nowhere near that wild child kind of player. And in fact, Kevin Durant takes more shots on a regular basis than Westbrook does. It's just that he tends to draw more attention because of his style of play. But he's fully capable of running on offense and just setting up players and playing with pace. And so I think it's going to be rocky. I think they're probably going to start off with 500 ball for a while. But once they settle into a groove and figure out who can contribute when, I think they're going to be fine.
Well, I'm not too worried about third row, but there was a stat out there. There was something like it went when Russell Westbrook doesn't play with Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. He puts up shots at the same average as Will Chamberlain did.
Yeah, but you also have to put that into context, and that is when is Westbrook doing his work? It's going to be when Durant has foul trouble, when the offense is struggling, when Durant needs a break or something like that. And so the only offense out there is really Westbrook. But now you're asking him to be the full facilitator, and I think he's capable of it, and he's at least communicated to the press that he understands that it's not about him winning. It's about him elevating the team to win. And given the growth that we've seen in him over the first part of his career, I don't see any reason why he's not going to be able to do it. Now, is he going to have some rough spots where he tries to go hero ball and take over a game and it's just not there? Sure. But you know who else does that? Everybody. Every star in the NBA tries to do that. So let's not single him out for something that every guy does. You know, whether it's Kobe Bryant from years before, Chris Paul will do it. LeBron James will even do it to his team's detriment. I mean, everybody is going to be susceptible to that kind of mentality. It's just that Westbrook, with the way he plays and his historic criticism, he's going to get more flack than most.
Probably so. He doesn't get any flack from me.
No. You're one of his champions, so
I have to be. But you know what? He's got a tough road to hoe because this isn't for him. He's a facilitator first and foremost, and there's no one there to facilitate to. I hate to break it to you; it's a bummer, but he's going to go out there and do what he does, and it is what it is. Steven Adams is going to step up big, though. I wouldn't worry about him either. He's going to be a beast. The bigger loss was Mitch McGarry because that kid. It's going to be fantastic, J.A. You watch. I told you when the Thunder drafted him that this kid is going to be a beast in the NBA.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure to watch him thus far, and I'm really disappointed that his preseason got cut short because he's not just a hustle guy, like Tyler Hansbrough or something like that. He actually has a very high basketball IQ, and you can see it. With the way he moves, with the way he passes the ball, he has an innate understanding about motion and about spacing. And I even pontificated on our site that maybe the guy that steps up in Lamb's place, if Lamb doesn't shoot the ball well enough, is McGarry. He's proven that he's got three-point range. He can easily step out and shoot the 20-footer with ease. So he's got the pick-and-pop game. We know he can drive and he can finish at the rim well. Defense, we'll give him some time on that one, but I'm really excited, and I hope he gets a chance. Yeah, maybe it'll be 10 to 15 minutes a night, but if the second unit struggles offensively, he would be an excellent player to give a good shot to make that improve.
Well, we'll have to see, but not with that coach you have. He'll probably do the same thing to him that he did to Jeremy Lamb. Anyway, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, that was J.A. Sherman. You can find him at welcometoloudcity.com, and that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good, and most importantly...
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.